kick off with a comment or question or anything. Yeah? I can remember.
I found what you said very interesting.
Thank you.
In terms of testing, can you give some outlines of things that have been done with control groups, the classic standard method of measuring something against a null group which hasn't been treated in the same way?
Yes. That is a very important question. And one of the very popular ways of testing is the sort of random group control. You get people who are interested into one big group and then randomly assign them to the course or to the waiting list. And normally what happens that they have an option to come onto the next course after they've been on the waiting list, and they are tested before and after. And lots of studies found that they also get good results after they've been admitted on the course. And it is very important that we have this control group. However, you have to think it's something a little like baseline. Now, the question is always, are people who are coming to the meditation course motivated by self-interest? They come because they are already interested. That's why they will get good results. That's a question that nobody knows a good answer to. And people who are taking part in the trial, they're also interested. Maybe not that much as the other group, but they are. Does it answer your question?
Kind of related to that, I was wondering whether there's been any noticeable placebo effect. So as well as people selecting to be on a trial because they're interested in the effects, there's always the question, does even considering yourself, considering how you feel and whether you want to feel better, perhaps make you more aware? That would be a level of placebo effect, I think. Is there any way to distinguish that?
I think it's a little bit mind over matter thing. And actually probably medical trials with people who had chronic depression because of the chronic illness, those would be the best ones, because you get a group which gets all the medication and everything else, and you get the other group which gets meditation on top of it. And the results have shown that this is not a placebo effect.
Thank you. Who's next?
So is there any study that explains why? What's works in the brain? What is the explanation for?
Okay. There was a study done on Zen practitioners, and it's really, I think that some people are a little bit sadistic, because it was putting hot plate on their calf and see when they start to scream, yes? And the same, and the control group had exactly the same thing. And what was found in this study, that the Zen practitioners with many years' experience were able to withstand much higher temperature, and they would rate the level of pain lower than the control group. And when the measurement of their brain was done, it turned out that the cortical their cortex was thicker than in the non-meditating group. So there is something truly happening in the brain, so the change, and that was linked to the higher pain threshold. And cortex, actually, you can see this is the bit outside where our gray matter sits. There was another study which is not connected to pain, but is very recent, that people who meditate for a long time, not just Zen, there were all traditions, and there were 100 people taking part in this study, which is quite large for these studies, 50 controls, 50. What is called gyrification, so the folding of the outside of the brain, is much more, sort of, meditators have much more wrinkled brains than non-meditators. And what that means is that there is a larger surface of the brain involved, because every fold gives you bigger surface. So those are changes, physical changes, which are linked to meditation. And also what this study found, that the insula is the key structure which is involved in the meditation. Now, and I have, if I could ask somebody
could somebody
to come
help
around.
Us come out and show things around? We're going to send around some pictures.
I mean, it's a bit, insula is in the middle of the brain. I don't know whether I can find it here easily. Can you have a look? Can you see insula in there, in any of these pictures? And there are two identical sets, so.
This is the intelligence test for research students.
Yeah.
No insula. Is it down in the middle of the brain?
Yeah.
It's not labelled on any of these.
And it's not labelled on here either.
Can you use one of the pictures to show where it is, and then the students can go around?
I have.
It's this. Yeah. If you both find that picture and then take it round,
so it's right down in the middle of the brain.
Just take yours around then, David, if you really got one.
Yes, and while we are sort of trying to figure insula in that, there is also mindfulness practice leads to increase in regional brain gray density. So you get lots of effects. The more gray cells. And also it was shown in another study that with people who meditate, their brain ages less. The cortex doesn't thin that much. So it's all...
Are there any known chemical effects, any changes in dopamine levels or receptors or anything similar like that?
Not that I know of. They probably are, but I looked at the functional MRI, which can sort of access the living brain directly during meditation.
Can you do MRI while somebody's meditating?
Yeah.
You can meditate in the scanner?
Yes. Which is very good point.
But quite difficult to get sorted, I suspect. Yeah.
Yes. The earlier measurements, there was quite a lot of electroencephalography done, because we humans, we are really sort of collection of microscopic electric charges, and everything moves. So we are producing a lot of microscopic magnetic fields. So that's why when you put somebody into the magnet, the response can be measured, because they get somehow oriented and give you a little bit of signal. Signal is quite weak, but it is still there. And everybody has heard about brain waves, yes? That our brain, depending on the state in which we are, sends out waves of a certain frequency. And now that is something which was measured also quite recently, that experienced Tibetan monks who had anything between 10,000 to 50,000 meditation hours were producing very strong gamma brain waves. And this is frequency between 30 to 80 megahertz. And that is above the state when we are sort of wakeful. And the MRI, which was done at the same time, shown that quite a lot of regions in the brain were activated and coordinated. So concentration really poised your brain. I was actually pretty excited by that study, because it finally shows what the concentration is good for, that it really in brain it coordinates different parts, so rather being... The corollary is, of course, that it cuts down distractions. Yeah, so that helps.
Thank you. Who next? Everyone's been quiet. Want to go longer?
Have you done any sort of longitudinal studies to check whether it shows any sign of arresting brain deterioration? very much in the news these days.
I should mention next month's cafe is on dementia, so there may be a general interest we can transfer over.
I'm actually not aware about that, because all these studies that I'm quoting, they are normally done on healthy people. We are looking into the new trend, which is positive psychology. And the implication would be that if we understand how it works in healthy people, we can look into helping people with dementia and other illnesses. That's the. But I'm not aware of any study which looked into sort of what it is like. It's probably some regions of the brain would be depleted.
Are there any downsides to meditation? I ask because it's usually found that both techniques or pharmaceuticals that appear to improve cognition in one way, there turns out to be a hidden cost. You're improving one thing at the cost of making another work less good. Have you studied that?
Yes. And also, meditation can be very detrimental to people who have what is called the diseases of the self. If somebody suffers from schizophrenia or paranoia, it can be absolutely disastrous.
Do people know why?
Yes, because if you do meditation properly, you come to the point in which there is nothingness. And they have enough problem to pulling themselves together in the day rather than coming to the point there is nothing, absolutely nothing. So that's that is one of the drawbacks. Also, what I think is, depending on the people's traumas and their history in life, it can be sometimes very, very hard going. And unless they are really committed and want to become better, they may have hell of the time.
Can I follow that? People who are on the autism spectrum, autistic or Asperger's, can you comment on how easy they find it to meditate, or how beneficial or otherwise?
I have no personal experience, and I'm not aware of anybody trying that with people.
Wow.
Yeah, so I cannot comment. I wish I would know.
I was wondering, is very interesting, I think we might end up coming back, but it occurred to me while you were talking, there are clearly lots of studies going on. Do you know if anybody is looking at the chemical effects on the body rather than the brain? It occurred to me that, you know, healthy volunteers still sometimes get ill. You know, we all suffer odd viruses now and again. Is there any way to detect a benefit from meditation on general health level, general kind of well-being? Possibly, again, things like oxytocin, stress hormone release in the body?
Mm-hmm. Yes, this is a link to the studies of stress, because that's where we can measure the level of hormones produced by the body. And it is very well proved that that meditation lowers the stress level. And there is nothing, I'm afraid it's terribly trivial. The first effect is really trivial, because what we do in meditation, we start to breathe deeply. And that means our parasympathetic system comes into the play, and it automatically.
Can you just explain what the parasympathetic system?
Yeah, I mean, we have automatic nervous system, which consists of two parts. One is sympathetic, the other is parasympathetic, and they sort of work like, if you like, gas pedal and the brake. So sympathetic nervous system is like gas pedal; it gets your body going. When you're under stress, the adrenaline is produced, cortisol is produced, so it works on all the pituitary glands and name it, you have it. And of course, if you do nothing, it can go on, the production can go on. But normally, the parasympathetic system would kick in and start to break it down. And one of the ways what parasympathetic system rules is breathing. So when you start breathing deeply, you get relaxed. And that's the first effect of meditation. Always. If you just breathe deeply and think about the times you went for an interview or for examination, and people would tell you, just breathe deeply, dear, just breathe deeply. They wouldn't tell you why, yes, but that's... And if there are any medical persons here, they know. This is just very, very mundane effect. But there is more to that, because there were studies which compared relaxation and meditation brings you more.
I was just wondering, you were talking about young people meditating to me earlier. I wonder, what age can you start meditating? Do babies meditate?
Right.
Can you ask them to tell?
No. According to the theory of my teacher, the babies are in constant state of meditation. And why? Because until the age of two, they do not have the separation between them and others. So they just live from one moment to another. They do not have this concept of the future. So they are, if you like, in the state of meditation. And of course, when they start to grow, it's impossible to be in that, because we have to function in the world. So that's where the switching now to the Western terminology, when the ego starts to form and they start to separate. And if you had small children, or if you know somebody with small children, you will notice that there is a point in which they start to scream, no, no, mine, 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 not yours, mine, 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 yeah? That's where we separate from that. But what we can do with meditation, when we do it sincerely, we can go into stage of super adult, where we can go into meditation state and be in it, and then switch back to our normal states. So we have, like, you know, two hands. On one hand, we function perfectly in the world of human ideas, because, I mean, why not? And in the other hand, we can go into the space when there is no good, no bad. We are non-judgmental there. And experienced meditators do just that. They switch from one to another.
Does non-judgmental mean being non-judgmental about yourself as well as about what you're feeling and experiencing?
Yes. I mean, it is like the frequently made comparison is of the mirror. If you have a mirror, it reflects whatever comes. It doesn't care whether it's an ugly person or beautiful person. So in the non-judgmental state, you just see things arising and coming, and you don't give them labels. Everything has equal value and no value.
Sorry.
You talked about some variation, differences between states, both of meditation and some disorder. Do you have a wider spectrum between states of mind, for including hypnosis and dreaming, particular interests of mine?
Right. I mean, now it depends very much on the tradition, because in the beginning of meditation, and especially in that one that we do with body awareness, what you do, you are just with the breath. You follow the breath and you are becoming the breath without thinking and reflecting on it. And if you follow the... And that's fine, because that gives you concentration, clarity, energy, focus, whatever. If you want to follow the spiritual path, there are different states. And most people who follow the Buddhist way of life want the so-called enlightenment. And on the way to enlightenment, all these other states are very pleasant, but they are not it. So your teacher will tell you, oh, you had this blissful experience, how wonderful, drop it, forget about it. Oh, it's going really tough for you. Oh, I'm so sorry. Great, great, you are there. You know, so there is, again, no distinction. It's not what is important. So in this sense, in my tradition, we don't do any dream analysis. There are others. The Tibetan Buddhism is very strong on that. But I'm not authorized to talk about it, as I have no first experience. Does it answer your question?
I was thinking about the lead that is provided. In a sense, if you're going to use the Buddhist tradition, you are being led by Buddha and his current members of his sect. if you're under hypnosis, you're being led by the hypnotherapist. And if you're in dreaming, then I don't know what the Freudian interpretation would be, but there isn't that lead from external effects in the same way. But they're just my crazy ideas. You don't have to.
No. I mean, it's interesting, but one thing is that Buddha is a sort of teacher and not a teacher. I don't know how to explain it better, but I try. On his deathbed, Buddha said, don't listen to that. You have to find the truth yourself. Don't listen to any teacher. You have to find the light within yourself. And that's why it is experiential. In this sense, it's objective as science is objective. Because as a scientist, now I switch to being a scientist, I'm not going to listen to any authority. I have to prove that something exists or does not exist myself. And so it is within true Buddhist path. I see the historical Buddha as self-made man, okay? Do it yourself. He's not going to save me. It's only me who can achieve something through my own effort. So in this sense, it is different from many religious traditions when you have to really obey the teaching. And there is also that it's more guideline than guidelines than teaching.
We've got somebody at the back, then come to the front again.
I was wondering if in your research you've looked at the opposite end of the spectrum. You've been talking about looking at the benefits of meditation on concentration and using a control group, but what about the opposite end, attention deficit disorder? Have you looked at the comparison brain scans for people suffering from that?
I think there are some studies, but I can't comment on that. I'm not too familiar with them. Sorry about that. It's maybe a little bit of my bias because we have permission from university to work with healthy people. That's the and as I said, and the courses that I'm teaching have very explicitly built in, we cannot work with people because we don't do any cognitive therapy, we are not qualified, and wrong psychological approach can really muck up people. So that's something we have to be aware of.
I wondered if you saw a role for this. In education, particularly for junior school children.
Well, actually, it's been done, not by our programs, but similar programs. And it actually shows that the children have better attention span, not surprisingly, and they come to school more happily, and they have better social interactions. And the meditation for children is rather different than for grown-ups. It's much shorter, obviously, and more like a play.
Do you still concentrate on breathing? Do you teach them how to
breathe? Yeah, I mean, the breathing and also counting the breath, those are two basic techniques because they are simple. There is another one which is actually coming from not even Jon Kabat-Zinn, but from the Zen tradition that was adapted, which is called the body scan. And that is just moving your awareness through the whole body from top to bottom. And it's easier than sort of doing the breath one because you are in a given place in your body only for shorter time, so your brain has no time to get bored, yeah? So that's moving attention. And that's very helpful if people have some sort of illness and pain, because you can find where is the pain in your body and just be with this pain, and quite a lot of time it sort of gets much better. It gets sometimes even complete release.
That promotes all sorts of thoughts about endorphin release, which is, of course, controlled by the parasympathetic nervous system. So anybody else? Any other comments? Will, can you get that?
Is mindfulness something that you can teach yourself, or do you think you need a practitioner to go through different steps? Are there some sort of useful workbooks?
You can always teach meditation yourself. The problem is that it's very hard to sustain it on your own. So it's much better to get a kickstart in a group. There is something, I would say, magical about group interaction. And one of it is a sort of subtle peer pressure. I mean, when you sit and after 5 minutes your brain says, well, no, you want this cup of tea, or, look, there is this program on TV that we are missing. If you're at home, I bet nine times out of ten you get up and do that. If you are in a group, you feel sort of shy of doing it, yes, until there is a break. So it helps when you learn by having group interaction. And the courses work like that you have meeting once a week with some introduction and practice, and then during the week you practice by yourself, and then you come back, and that's how it gets ingrained over time.
You just mentioned courses. Are they open to anybody?
University courses, I'm afraid, are not. But if you allow me for a small bit of advertising...
Please advertise. There's no restriction on advertising.
Yeah,
I have
recently started a company which I called Focused Mind, and I had a couple of first courses already, and I'm just setting courses for next year. So if you take my card and go on the internet, not today, but in a couple of days, there will be current information.
University courses are open. You have to pay, but they are open.
What I do, I run courses for division, and the group is not very large. I take maximum 15 people. It doesn't work for bigger groups.
Do other people run courses which are open or not?
People?
Do other people other than you run any courses? Mark
Williams courses as well. But these are slightly different, and I don't know whom he accepts. I accept people from university, and sometimes if there is place, partners. That's very important, because in my experience, even if partner is from outside university, they support each other. So it's a good way of doing it. So what I do, I run them for free for the division, because I got room for free from a college. And there is a small charge for guided meditation CD that is recorded by the Zen master who set up these courses with whom I work, and that goes for his temple fund. So I'm not even getting a penny out of that.
There's an obvious question to ask. You mentioned the experimental psychology department doing studies. Not just people in this room, but my mailing list of over 500 has a pretty good record of volunteering. What kind of people are you looking for the studies?
I look for all ages of people, because we also have, we run these courses, that means people who studied with this particular Zen master, we run them for outside university. So the problem is always with control group, because people who are interested want to get on the course, and you lose them if that. So we have ages from 18 till 65, 70, all ages, all nationalities. So whoever is very skeptical, I would be very happy to have this person in the control group. More than happy. I mean, the more skeptical you are and the more you think it's rubbish, the happier I would be.
Maybe you'll get some.
Yeah.
Any other comments or points? Did you say you wanted to run an exercise?
Yes.
Should we give that a go now? Is that
yes.
A good idea? Because there might be some questions afterwards.
Okay, yeah.
Do you want to describe what do we want to do?
Just,
yeah.
Okay, now, don't move, stay as you are. Okay. Just stay as you are, seated, standing, whatever, as you are. And close your eyes, and for 1 minute, find out how you feel in this particular position. Just observe. How is your breath? How do you feel? All right, now gently open your eyes.
And we are going to change your position. The main point about good meditation is the posture. That's the first thing that we are paying attention to. And since you are in the chair, this chair is sloping back, so if you please move slightly to the front. So you have a bit of the space. And now separate your legs so it's, your knees are roughly hip width apart. And place your feet very firmly on the ground, as firmly as you can. And now, that is the starting position, but we need something more. If you take your both of your hands and put it under your buttocks and find two bones, they are called the sitting bones. Yeah? Can you feel it? They look a little bit like that. So try to sit on the sitting bones. Yeah? It can feel a little bit uncomfortable, but it's not a very long exercise. So what that gives you is a feeling of its groundedness. You call it groundedness. You imagine your body, your lower part of the body, as strong as a rock, as solid as a rock, and as stable as a rock. And if you sway your body slightly side to side, back to front, what you will find that your spine becomes straighter, becomes more upright. And then bringing your hands together, into your lap, so left hand in your right hand, not placing your fingers, just like that. And now going up into your body, relaxing your shoulders, relaxing your neck. Your spine is long, your neck is long. Closing your mouth, if you can breathe through the nose. And now move your hand on your belly and breathe from your lower belly. Start to feel how your body moves, how your belly moves in and out when you breathe. Just take a few deep breaths and find the breath in your belly. And now, bring your hands back into your lap and either cast your eyes along the line of your nose, about 1 meter ahead of you, and half closed, defocused, gentle, soft. Or you can close them if it feels more comfortable. It's fine, either is fine. And then breathing through your nose, relaxing. Your mouth is closed. Your tongue is pressed against the roof of your body. And now, take a good breath in, and when you exhale, exhale as deeply as you can. And at the end of this breath, because your body naturally, before your body naturally takes breath in, there is a point in which there is nothing. And just take a few deep breaths and experiment with this feeling. And imagine that you are melting, that you are melting into the universe. Just gently. It's very simple, nothing you do, just breathing, just sitting. gently coming back into your fingers, into your toes. But before you open your eyes, find out how you feel now. And then, gently swing your body side to side, opening your eyes when you are ready. And when you are ready, have a really good stretch. Very good stretch, like a cat on the sun window seat. Thank you.
That's quite the most unusual thing we've ever done. Does anybody want to say anything about that? What it felt like, or ask anything? Or? I think for me it was very hard to it felt like I had to decide how I felt.
Mm-hmm.
Particularly in the first one, of course.
Sure.
But even afterwards, my mind was sort of buzzing with kind of, how do I feel, you know, trying to compare it to things. That I suspect that's something which becomes easier with practice.
Oh, yes.
But it's quite a good place to do this, because we have that low hum from the air conditioner. Yeah. We're not a long way away from 9 o'clock. If there's anything in particular anybody wants to say, we can take it now. But also, when we're clearing up, there's plenty of time to talk to Barbara as well, if you'd like to. I'm sensing some kind of on this. Maybe we should bring the official part of the evening to an end, but please don't feel anyone has to rush out. We're a little bit earlier than normal to stop, so what I think is we'll just very quietly and calmly clear. I'm not going to do anything in a hurry now. We'll clear up. We don't need any help. There are lots of us here today, so do sit, stay for a while. We'll just move about collecting bits and pieces off the tables, and as I said, do come and talk to Barbara. She's got a box of her cards here if anyone's particularly interested. And I'll get her to give me details of the trials, if there's anything that you want to know, which I can send around the mailing list. Other than that, thank you very much indeed, Barbara. Thank you.